From cradle to grave, every moment of your life is one word after another, overlapping all the words from all of those who've crossed your path in a never-ending cycle of tale and experience. There are no prizes, no contests, no rules, and no boundaries. Just a few minutes spent exchanging the narrative from moments of our own human existence. Welcome to Tell Me a Story.
So you're keeping me away from Evolve. I just picked that up.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah.
Is that out on PC yet?
Yes, it is, but
it's
fuck you and your
bucks,
PC.
Man.
You need to get a goddamn system.
No, because then I'd have to plug it into a TV, and then I would never be able to play because my wife and my kids own all the TV time.
I'd give you a TV.
I have one in my office, but if I'm in my office, I have to work. That's just how it is. That Destiny is the one I really need out on PC right fucking now. Why can't we play together if I'm on the PC?
Servers.
Really? They won't connect to the same servers?
No, it won't.
All right.
I mean, it kind of makes sense if you know that stuff. It doesn't make sense.
It makes no sense. I refuse to believe that.
The only MMO I've ever seen capable of doing that is Final Fantasy XIV.
Well, there you go.
It worked. It's a shitty game.
Yeah, but it worked, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I have reached out on the Skype, and I am talking to my good friend Aaron Burton.
Hello.
Who is the primary host of Geekhead Radio.
That is correct.
At geekheadradio.com, right?
That is correct. That's the redirect. It'll put you at the defense.
That's what people type. It's the whole 322 is not the same either, but we just say it because it's easier to remember everything else.
The Left Show presents me.
Yes, you. You are, I want to call you a find, but the truth is that you were more like a blind date that seems to be working out quite well. Now, for those of you that listen to The Left Show, you are aware of our award-winning comedian, Melissa Merlot.
Oh, she's a beautiful woman.
And Melissa and Aaron went to high school together I believe, Laura Ingalls Wilder. is that about that far back? It feels like that
Not
far
quite,
back, right?
But East High School.
You went to East? When did you graduate?
96.
Okay. So you're a bit younger than me. You might not know. I knew people at East, but they were gone before you got there.
Yeah,
they were class of 91.
Unless they were like you and just kept getting held back.
I was out at 16, dude.
I know you were. I'm just giving you shit.
No, it's one of the few things in my life I don't regret, and I'm seriously still proud of from that time. Everything else back then, I kind of look on with a shade of suspicion as though I should not have done what I had done. And will continue to spend the rest of my life making amends.
But you have such a rich life experience.
You know what? I have an insane life experience. And to be completely honest, there are some things that I would give up.
So you could remember it?
Kind of that. And so that it didn't fucking hurt anymore. I mean, look, one of the biggest problems I have health-wise, insulin, lack of insulin aside, and the migraines, don't care about those, or the...
And the gout and the dementia.
I don't have gout.
Yet.
I don't have gout. but I do have malaria, and I'm not very happy with that. But my teeth are fucked up because I just went into a really insane, violent cycle somewhere in my late teens when I moved out to Colorado. I got my first fake ID so I could be a bouncer.
Way to go.
Yeah, it was pretty dumb.
Terrible dental care.
And I did that, and I like to brawl a little bit, and just for fun. Nothing serious, nothing, that worried me at all until I broke my neck in a car accident. And after that, I felt like I had something that I just had to prove to myself. That there was still some vim and vigor in the old boy. For various reasons, I was starting to have doubts. A lot of pain when they took the brace off. My neck had gone from 23 inches to 15 inches, which is
Jesus.
Really hard to hold your head up when it's used to a much bigger base.
It's basically you were just trying to look like a Rob Liefeld drawing.
Kinda. I mean, I wasn't trying. I just did. My next 21 now, it'll never be that big again, I don't think, unless I do something stupid like start bodybuilding, which I don't want to do. But I did, and there were that followed there, starting before I broke my neck, but then when I was bouncing out in Salt Lake City, to be completely honest, I came back home for a year in 94 to 95, which is where I met Forrest. We'll talk about him in a minute. And things were getting a little nuts in my head. Things were getting a little scrambled. No idea why at that time. And then after I broke my neck, I just lost my fucking, it was just like any common sense that had to do with the fact that I now had a very fragile headstand, the pedestal upon which raised what had been up until that point my prized possession.
Mm-hmm.
It was thin and weak. And so I decided to prove to myself that I could beat the shit out of people. Like I said, there's no logical linear sense to it, but that's what I did. And I went to work.
I can diagnose you.
Oh, I went to some awful, started working at some awful fucking bars. Yeah, I know you could. Shut the fuck up. Started with awful, dangerous bars, drive-by shooting bars, lots of, biker brawls and jock brawls. And
oh, Barbary Coast?
No, I was out in Denver. I was at a place called the Skyline. It was rough. I liked it. I liked it a lot. But it was stupid. I got beat up a lot and have weakened my teeth. And so now as I'm getting older, and I eat crunchy foods, the fuckers just explode. And so, yeah.
It's time to eat your mush.
I just need to get them replaced is what I need. But it turns out that's a really expensive thing to do to get your teeth replaced. So, I mean, that's what I wish. I wish that I had ducked. And if I could go back in, and I swear to God, that's my regret. Oh, that guy hit me. I didn't see it coming. If I could go back in time, I'd warn myself. But that's really it. Nothing else. I really wouldn't give up much of anything else. There's a couple of places, and maybe we'll get to that. Maybe we won't. But where I behaved badly towards someone I was involved with I disengage, man. It's hard to stay engaged. I'm kind of lazy about that. It's made me kind of a shitty husband insofar as I can get underwater in a project, but I just can't. It's really easy to go into my head, and it's really, really hard to get me out. I'm one of those, it's a new phrase I just heard that dinged immediately, and that's an extroverted introvert.
Aha.
I can go out in the world, I can do things, I can be personable, but the truth is I would rather be locked in a room by myself fucking around on some project or another than I would really. And it's hard.
It's like I'm a bald echo of you.
There you go. But I it's hard in when I was working in politics too, is it's like it's all fucking social. And I don't like being social. And so I disengage in between elections and that made life financially hard. When it came time to find more work, I guess that's a regret. I regret the years I worked in politics, more for the fact that my kids had to go without than anything else. But I had some really good, really good, impressive people that I liked and trusted and respected stabbed me in the back. Cause that's what you do when you get elected.
It's politics.
Yeah. And I have never felt like that was something that I needed to do.
You know, I'm going to stop you here for a minute.
Good. Please.
From what I've seen of your wonderful wife and your two beautiful daughters.
Yeah, they're okay.
You've done pretty good with everything going on. I mean, you've got some highly intelligent daughters who know how to speak, how to interact. I don't know if you ever tell your wife's name, so I'm...
No, it's Brenda. If they don't know it by now,
I just wanted to make sure. So Brenda, she seems quite happy with you overall.
I doubt it.
Well,
I think we get along really well. I think that if she has one giant regret in her life, it's about 6'4" and weighs 275 pounds. I think
you're being hard on yourself, man.
Look, I am not abusive. I am not whether physically, verbally, anything. I'm not. What I am is I have the squirrels and and the squirrels own me. She calls. She finally put it together and found a way to deal with it, and she calls me the mad scientist in the basement. and
I can see that. I can see that.
If she left me, I wouldn't be able to care or feed for myself, which is absolutely true.
I'm in a very similar situation.
Even though I cook more than anybody else around here, now that I think about it. But yeah, I mean, that's just what it is. Is we've found a certain simpatico. You know, we've had our headbutts and what have you, but nah, she's great, man. I love her to pieces. I really do. I don't know why the fuck she's still married to me. It makes no sense to me at all. She could do way better, as far as engagement and fulfilling her needs of companionship, which as much as I try to do, I just end up fucking it up all the time. I'm an awkward son of a bitch. And
you know, you reach a decade of marriage and, you know, you're lucky if you can pull that off.
Yeah, we're 13 years, April 1st.
I'm 10 years in, so, I mean, I kind of get it.
Yeah, it ain't easy.
No. No. But part of the whole process is understanding, you know what? I can fuck up sometimes. If you give me a chance to work on that a little bit, I'll try. And as long as you do that, that's what matters.
So... you went to East High.
Yes. 92 to 96.
In the early 90s. Okay, so you started high school the year after I would have normally matriculated. Right?
Yes, I would assume so.
I was class of 91. I got out in late 89, but I went to college because fuck a bunch of high school.
If you were in Utah County, I mean, they were used to dealing with dairy farmers. So
yeah, you know. If you could tie your shoes and not shit yourself when you did it, then you could pretty much get a high school diploma in the Alpine School District.
If you could very successfully enunciate your T's in mountain, you were good to go.
Yeah.
Now you're thinking back to all those times. You're like, yeah. Do I say mountain? Now,
I've seen delightful pictures of you from your teenage days.
Sir. Oh, yes.
And the reason I got just slightly, Twitter-pated about the fact that you went to East is, there was a long-term series of gigantic fuck-ups in my life that involved a girl, that went to school there.
Hmm.
And I was like, oh, wait, he had a mohawk. They would have known each other.
It's possible.
It is. To say. Yeah. I don't know. Why aren't you on G-Chat?
Why aren't I not on G-Chat?
Yeah.
Like if you to on, record this instead?
No, on the Google chat. If you're on the Google chat, I could send you her name because I am not.
I'm on the Google
it.
Chat. I'll log in.
I don't see you.
Well, give me a second. I gotta log in.
God damn it! Why aren't you ready?
You fucking HD bastard.
So you finished. You finished in '96. You graduated
that is
on
correct.
Time. You were valedictorian. No,
hardly. I graduated by the skin of my teeth, mostly because a lot of my teachers kind of understood that the reason why I wasn't completing work is just pure boredom.
Oh, yeah.
They actually tried to get me to graduate early, sent me to Salt Lake Community College, and I wasn't able to get into the classes I needed to be able to graduate early, so I took some humanities classes and spent a lot of time at the punk coffee bar that was attached to the old club Confetti's. And
what was that called?
Caffeines at one point, but it was just the coffee bar.
Huh.
You may be thinking of Java Jive.
No, I was thinking every time I think of black clad late Bandaloops. 80s, early Bandaloops.
Yeah, Bandaloops. I know a lot of the people that used to work at Bandaloops.
I used to go in there from time to time, but when Bandaloops was open, I lived down, you know, in the Provos and where we went to Denny's because we were badass. And it was the only thing open after 9. So, I loved Bandaloops. Bandaloops was this great mysterious thing in the north, in the big city, that I found terribly disappointing after I moved. Cause I left Utah, God, I guess in 91 and moved to Denver, and had the great coffee houses of Denver, like Muddy's and Paris on the Platte, and then came back here and went to Bandaloops. And I was like, oh, it's like somebody put an espresso machine in an old hot dog store. it's not as, and then ended up working a port-a-call and living in the Shoebrick. And I had a south facing window in my apartment and realized, I'm in a metropolitan downtown area that ends four blocks from where it starts. Because I'm looking.
And the funny thing is, I was listening to your last episode, 14, with Forrest.
Yes.
And the Cocaine Twins.
Yeah.
I knew them.
Oh, yeah.
Post-cocaine.
Huh.
Darren and Barb.
Yeah. Yeah. They were, now that he knew them better than I did. I had come back a couple of times just to visit and watched Anchors Away die after Ken and Jeanette Noli sold it to their niece, which was, I believe, Barb.
It's possible. I don't remember all those details.
Yeah, and they apparently sniffed it. They just flushed it down their nose.
I think they would own that at this point.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe, I hope. But it was, I mean, it was just this wonderful.
I went to graduate school with a Cocaine Barb.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
I don't talk to her anymore.
No. I just wish that, I don't know. Granted, the federal government came in and everything got fucked up and it disappeared anyway to that giant Borg collective on, what an ugly fucking building.
Have you been inside of it? That was my last job. I was working out of that building for a while.
Is it as ugly inside?
Pretty much.
Oh, that's unfortunate. I was hoping to have a goddamn treasure of architecture and so they couldn't finish it.
It's very bizarre. It feels like a modern museum that doesn't have any art. Like each level, you know, is separated, but you have, I guess best way I can describe it is a central shaft, and which is perfect for, you know, when people go to bankruptcy court and lose everything, and, you know, if they eventually decide to jump and, you know, commit suicide, they can very easily do that.
Huh.
But the best part is they have glass.
Very, very thought out.
Yeah. And they've got glass walkways exiting out of the elevator, so you can look above you and see the silhouettes of the people above you. Unfortunately, it doesn't give you enough detail that you can, you know, get upskirt shots. And well, I don't think you want to.
No, I'm a perv. I'm a perv for people that are naked on purpose. You know, I'm not one of those weird sneak around type pervs. I'm more like, oh, look at her. Oh, damn it. That hurt my neck. That kind, but I don't know. All right. You finished up high school and then you went to college. Did you stay at Slick?
No, I did the Salt Lake Community College track for just a little bit. And just once I realized, you know, these credit hours aren't really going anywhere for me. It gave me an excuse to go fuck off and, you know, screw up my potential education. So I spent more time. I stopped going to my humanities class and just spent all my time at that terrible coffee bar. So then I went to the U for a little bit because I don't know how do you want me to just jump from there talking education, or you want me to fill in the gaps?
I don't give a shit. Tell me a story.
All right. So I made the wonderful mistake of moving in with my high school girlfriend shortly after graduation. And a lot of that had to do, unfortunately, with the fact that my mother was really struggling at that time. And I had just kind of vowed, fuck this, I'm not going to be around for this anymore. So all my plans kind of got thrown out the window. And I was just like, I need to desperately get out. So I moved in with my high school girlfriend, which was the dumbest fucking mistake I ever made.
Sure.
But it's part of, you know, what got me here. And so somewhere around the age of, let's say 20, maybe 21, I went up to the U because what I had been doing previously, besides working shitty retail jobs, was I was subcontracted through my high school art teacher to do storyboard animation for some of the cartoons that were around at the time.
Wait,
and I was
you
like,
can
I'm
draw?
Gonna go to college and do that for a living.
You can draw?
I haven't tested that anymore.
Start testing. We'll get to that later. Start testing. Yeah.
So, so around that age time, I was going up to the U, taking a few art classes. My professors up there, I have more of an illustration, slant to it. So the U, their program was more geared towards fine arts. And so I was drawing comics and cartoons at that time.
Sure.
And was not up to snuff when it came to some of the stuff that they were doing.
No, when you go to art school, they tend to get a little snobby, especially back then. I think a lot of illustrators, at least, you know, hand-drawn cartoon guys, comic guys, that sort of stuff, they get a lot more legitimacy at school now than they did back when we were kids.
Back in our day. So this is probably 98 or so, maybe 99. And my girlfriend and I had made a number of financial mistakes, and we were living in a fairly...
Heroin.
God, I wish. That would have explained a lot more. living in kind of a nicer condo that we had no business renting. We could barely afford it, but, sure. You know, it worked out. And because of my young attitude and not really having much concept of the real world, decided I would go to school full time and quit my job. And, you know, student loans would help me pay for everything. And I discovered that technically, by the state of Utah's laws at that time, my mother could theoretically support me. And so they wouldn't give me the full amount.
I remember that bit me in the ass my second year of school.
And so my then girlfriend was working at a credit union and started embezzling money.
Always good. Always nice.
And got caught. And nearly fucked my life over because she was depositing the funds that she was embezzling into a bank account in my name.
Well played. And, well played, crazy girl.
What's that?
I said, well played, crazy girl.
Yes. And when they caught on and they caught her, the one thing that saved my ass is that it was a bank account that I never used, didn't even really think about. It was one that was just open for a car loan for many years prior.
True.
So that saved my ass, but she lost her job. And then that's basically, I dropped out of school because I had to start working. And I was thinking with my dick instead of with my head and continued to let her just kind of fuck up my life for a number of years after that. And, you know, it didn't matter that she slept around with five different guys. It was the attitude of, if I don't see it, it's not happening. And so... Yeah, after I finally pulled my head out of my ass, then I decided I didn't want to go into art anymore. I wanted to go in psychology because I wanted to figure out what the fuck happened to me.
Yeah. Most people I know that go into shrinkage, they it seems like more of a most of them aren't aware of it though. It's a journey of self-discovery that they may not be aware they're on.
I can guarantee to you that there's many therapists and psychologists out there who have never figured that out, and they're terrible for that.
Yeah. Because I know I'm nuts.
See earlier conversation about the cocaine twin.
Sure. Yeah.
So it took me a number of years, and I think I went back to started going to University of Phoenix and, you know, fucking myself over financially. But, you know, to me that was... That was preferable than continuing to work at Office Depot because that's where I was at that time. And, you know, start working on my undergraduate. And I was originally going to go into forensic psychology, primarily to go work with the FBI, to go into profiling. And I decided pretty early on that I liked working with the criminals more than I liked working to put them away because it put me in a better position to help them change their lives.
Sure.
And so That's how I got into the field.
Where you're adorable.
Thank you.
I mean, you're one of the few people I know that actually gives a shit about their job. I mean, you know, we all whine
a little
bit about
work. Well, it's because
I'm
not a therapist anymore, technically.
Yeah. I mean, we all whine about our work a bit. You know, like me, I like what I do. Most days it's, you know, decorative data entry is what I call it because I'm just reworking templates somebody else built. But some days I got to create something, and I love that. I like being able to dip my head in, do a little art. It tends to you know, help bleed off the self-implied stresses of the legacy I am not quite building. I have a sense of my impending end.
You're hitting your midlife crisis finally.
No, I've had this since I was about 17. And I'm constantly building things to try and move in a direction where I can hit that level where at least some people will remember me in a good way.
Sure.
Don't get me wrong. If I died today, there'd be a whole bunch of happy fucking Republicans.
I'd be fucking sad. So well, fuck them.
I would too. Don't get me wrong. I'm not looking for it.
You'd be dead. You wouldn't care.
I would. I believe that while there may be no hereafter, I get one because I'm pretty fucking awesome. Oh my God. I still don't believe that.
You just want to haunt people is what it comes down
to. That's exactly what I want. That's exactly it. I finally want to be able to be the stocky perv that I refused to be in my alive days. Cause you know, alive days, you get tickets and shit for that. You end up on lists. I don't know. Okay, so you got rid of the crazy, and you went back, got your undergrad, and then decided that you didn't want to be the lead in a TNT show, that you'd rather be on, I don't know, what's one where they do Guys Helping Criminals, Fox? No.
you know, that's one of the things that pisses me off more than anything, is the media does not know how to actually portray therapy or mental health.
No, because it's a long-ass process, and they've got 42 minutes of a one-hour show to get to it.
Oh, they can't even get the basics right. They're a bunch of fucking morons. I mean, you might as well be reading Lovecraft novels, I mean, to the level of knowledge that they seem to have.
Yeah. I don't know.
Am I being too vague?
No, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you are, because I don't know. But what... What drew you away from sketch padding? I mean, was it just one day you woke up, or was there a trigger, or?
Well, okay. So to go back a little
bit
here.
Did your ex-girlfriend go to jail and you have a moment where you missed her? I'm just trying to dial in.
She moved to Colorado Springs. That was the smart thing.
Oh, it's an awful place.
It's terrible. I don't know why she fucking stayed there. Ugh. But, she was sick with me, so whatever. Basically, before I officially accepted that we were over and I pretended that we were still together, she moved to Colorado Springs essentially to start dating guys that she had met over ICQ, if you remember that.
I remember ICQ.
It's fucking terrible.
Were they little Air Force guys?
One of them was.
Aww.
And that's so almost the I had military. Let her leave with my car. Because, you know, I was the nice guy.
Oh, my God, you are such a bonehead.
Oh, yeah, I was a fucking bonehead. It wasn't until I was 23 that I finally pulled my head out of my ass.
Oh, it's delightful.
So, essentially, I had to grovel to my mother, who, you know, to summarize it fairly quickly, she had a problem with addiction for a while and got her shit together, and she went into therapy, as in... She attended it and then decided to become a therapist, and she's fucking amazing. But
oh, yeah?
I had to basically.
Did you ever get your car back?
Hmm?
Nothing.
Don't you even try and pull any Oedipal crap on me.
No, I just. You know.
So basically, during my time of mourning and trying to figure out what the fuck I was doing with my life and why I was torturing myself so much, she had finished graduate school and she started working for a local public defender's office. And she really helped me kind of understand. Basically, it gave me an opportunity to get close, just to start reading all her psychological manuals, like the DSM, I think it was 4, and number of other texts, and I got really fascinated with the psychology of it all. And the irony of it is that she kind of helped me go through that. And for a while, she was trying to help me get back up to the U. She had some connections up there with some people that were in the art department trying to convince me to go back. And I finally looked at it and I said, you know what? I just wanted to be an artist because I was fucking lazy. I didn't want to put any effort into it. It just seemed easy. And so I finally said to myself, you know what? I'm going to fucking challenge myself. I'm not going to take the easy path anymore because that's what keeps screwing me over.
You realize that with all of this setup, mm-hmm. when you get to the end, you have to say that it's about shrinkage, right? I'm saying
Well, maybe for you. I mean, it's not about shrinkage for me.
Well, I don't. What was your degree? Was it psychology or was it social?
Mental health counseling.
Mental health counseling.
So anyway, living with her for a little bit, you know, it still took me a couple of years to get back in school. I kind of had to finally say, screw this. You know, started another relationship with another girl who we weren't compatible, but, you know, we kind of helped each other out and we're still friends. So, I mean, I won't speak ill of her. We weren't going to fucking work. And, you know, after that ended, I went, you know what? I got to stop working these shitty ass jobs, working retail and, let's do this. Let's get going.
Yeah.
So started going back to school and you know, had some time actually being a bachelor for once instead of just living with girlfriends and roommates, and then realized I couldn't afford my own fucking books and had to live in with my grandparents for a little bit so I could go to school. And then prior to that, started dating my wife and moved in with her just before we got married and just kind of plucked through school all the way.
Sin?
Nah, only for a couple of weeks.
Good for you.
I had known my wife in high school, that the biggest irony of it all, and we had stayed friends. We had one really terrible shitty date where she was 15, I was 17, and in our first date during a movie, I decided to fuck with her and turn and go, what are you thinking right now? Never ask a woman that, especially, well, she wasn't a woman. She disclosed how much he was falling in love with me, and I went, oh, fuck. And basically destroyed the date. And then somehow afterwards, we were able to stay friends for 8 years. And so by the time that we finally said, fuck it, we're both single at the same time, let's give this a shot, we knew each other pretty well.
Hmm. That's odd. Because that's, had a girl said that to me at around that age, that would have been perfect.
I was a dog at that time. I was dating every woman I could possibly get my hands on. And so to hear that on the first date, I was like, no, wait, I don't want to be in a relationship. I want to see more boobies.
Yeah, but the point you're missing is that probably meant you could have got your hands on.
I will not say what preceded that movie for the benefit of my wife.
Oh, I love it. Okay, so you get out of school, you start working in the criminal justice system. Tong, tong.
Yeah, before I had finished my undergraduate, I was already working as a case manager at Valley Mental Health. So, and I was working specifically with their forensics unit, which is, sounds all impressive, but it's basically all the people that get court ordered to drug and alcohol and mental health treatment.
I worked at Valley Mental Health.
Did you? Which unit?
I think it's actually, I worked at Timpanogos.
Oh, okay.
Which I believe is owned and run by the same people. I may be wrong, but I only got to work there for one day. I don't know if you even know what this means. The folks down in Provo at the time will understand when Tim Mental Health was. I worked on the third floor as an orderly.
Yeah. So you were at the state hospital.
Yeah, I was down there with the lunatics.
Okay, yeah. Valley didn't
the third floor was where
was
they.
Wasatch Mental Health.
Oh, yeah, Wasatch. Yeah, I was at Timpanogos Mental Health. And anyway, I got attacked, and I didn't hit the guy. I didn't. But I did once he climbed over the top of me and started to bite my skull. I grabbed him and kind of flipped him off me onto the floor. And then very, very carefully, because I knew he was nuts, I wasn't like, I'm here to kick some ass. It was just, I was just more like, ow, he's biting my skull, and flipped him on the floor and then held him until the other guys got there. And apparently you were not allowed to defend yourself in that particular kind of manner.
Mm.
I was supposed to let him keep chewing on my head until the guys got there, which was not 30 seconds. And the truth was, is it really hurt. I don't know how anybody else would have done it. So they let me go. Pat on the head. Thanks for coming by. Apparently this is how I was going to spend an afternoon. That was a quick job. And after that, I believe I started working at B. Dalton Bookstore. So hey,
not so bad.
I went from shitty retail to lunatic bouncer to back to shitty retail again. I did. I mean, it was all right. I had worked in my younger years. I got in trouble when I was about 14.
Mm-hmm.
I broke my nose for the first of many, many, many times, but it was the first time.
Should we talk about your aggressive tendencies?
Shut up. And and no. I lost a baseball in the sun. It was a pop up.
Okay.
And I looked up to get it, and all I saw was sunshine. And I put the glove about where I thought the ball was, and then there was a really quick eclipse, and then pain. God, it hurt. That first time hurt so goddamn bad. I got some Darvocet. You remember Darvocet?
No.
Nice red pill. Worked really good. And a 14-year-old with Darvocet who doesn't know of drug problems, you know? I mean, we didn't even really have pot very much down in Utah County at that time.
Sure.
Some kids did. So I went to school, and, you know, it wasn't as fucking tense or weird as it is now. And, you know, I had a couple with me for my nose because it was just this big black mess. Well, we're out at gym class, and my buddy Brandon sprained the shit out of his ankle. I mean, it was swollen and purple, and because it was the Utah County Alpine School District, they didn't call his parents or anything. They just
walk it off.
Yeah. And so I'm like, oh, you know, and so I had helped him limp to his locker, and I'm like, well, if it hurts here, I have painkillers. These kill pain. No idea. Just didn't even, I didn't know. I was 14. I was a dipshit.
I can see where this is going.
He says, cool, thanks. Puts it in his pocket. Goes home. His mom's going through his pants. Finds the pill. Loses her fucking mind. The next thing you know, the America Fork Police Department is at my door. I go to juvie court about it. And they're like, what did you do? And I said, well, he hurt his ankle. So I gave him one of my pills that I got when I hurt my nose. And they're like, that's against the law. And I'm like, okay. I didn't know. I'm fucking 14. You know, what can I do to make it better? And they're like, 200 hours of community service, which I still think was pretty fucking excessive.
It is.
So I volunteered at a place down in American Fork, right on the border of American Fork and Pleasant Grove, called the Dan W. Peterson School. Hmm. And it works with the touched. I did my volunteer work with the motor development group, where we're trying to teach just basic, survival and elasticity skills to kids that didn't have them. My favorite being this kid, Randy, who couldn't talk, couldn't use his hands, couldn't use his feet, was stuck in a wheelchair, and we built him, a head harness. We got a piece of software for an old, I believe it was, I want to say it was a Franklin Ace 2000, but I think that's a little too old, but it was this old console computer. And what we did is we hooked up what basically was a one button mouse, one on each side of his head. And then an alphabet would pop up on the screen. And if he bunked his head to the left, it would move the cursor, and if he bonked it to the right, it would select the character and start spelling out words. It was wonderful to watch. It was beautiful to watch. And I spent hours and hours and hours with this kid because he was finally talking to somebody who wasn't a fucking doctor and wasn't in his family. And I could understand him, obviously, as he typed very slow. And we got a rapport going to where he could do shorthand almost. And he would type, and we would talk so long, and it made him so happy that, I mean, like, his temples would start to bleed because they were rubbing off. I went down to Checker Auto Parts and got one of those steering wheel covers, the fleece steering wheel covers.
Yeah.
And cut it into pieces and had my stepmom help me sew it so that they would fit over the end of these giant buttons and wouldn't fuck up his head as much. And I did that. I did that for a whole summer. It was really, really, it was a deeply moving part of my life. And it instilled in me an empathy that up until that time, I really only had for animals. Loved dogs. And at the time, was still okay with cats. Cats had not yet ruined many, many leather jackets. girlfriend's cats just love to pee on my shit.
Well, they're territorial.
Oh, they're awful is what they are. and so it did. And he died at the end of the summer, of cardiac arrest.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Oh, it was awful. I mean, it was just fucking awful. Up until that time, the worst thing that had happened to me was is that when my parents' divorce was final, my mom made me get rid of my dog, which went down to my cousins, and they renamed her, which I'm like, fuck you, you don't do that. That's not cool.
But the thing is that you gave that kid, Randy, an opportunity to actually feel like he was engaging, that he was more than just a burden on other people. That's pretty fucking awesome.
He's a great kid. I really liked him. He was a couple of years, I guess he was probably 11 or 12 and I was 14. But it did. And it's these little things that shape you young. Mm-hmm. The first being that the war on drugs is fucking stupid. Really, the war on drugs was me, a dumb 14-year-old kid, giving his buddy something to make his ankle not hurt, you know, and I got 200 hours of community service. And I looked at that and I still look back at it and I'm like, wow, that's fucked up. And had I spent those 200 hours cleaning up trash on the side of the road, then yeah, it would have been a really dumb punishment. I'd found something else to do that I had no idea was going to be, you know, so just awe-inspiring. I was just like, well, I'd rather do this than stand out in the sunshine because I'm a redhead and fuck sunshine. even then, and it turned into one of those things that ended up forming, you know, I can't even use the word political anymore because I'm not self-associating as a Democrat anymore because fuck those guys.
Yeah, they can't seem to pull their heads out of their ass either.
No, and it's just...
They have no testicles.
It is bad. But it's, you know, I tell my dad's a very conservative Republican, and it's his example that made me the Democrat I am today. Drives him nuts when I say it, but it's true. You know, he has a respect for women. He's not a racist. There was a period of time, a very short period of time, where he and my stepmom had, I believe, gotten it into their heads that I was gay. And had come to terms with it and had sat me down to give me the we love you no matter how you are speech.
And you said that in the last episode, and I wasn't sure how serious you were.
Oh, yeah. No, it was a beautiful, beautiful moment for them. And I laughed my ass off. And it took some very adult, salty language to finally get my dad to realize. And the truth is, looking back on it, there's a part of me that wishes I just would have let him have it for a while.
Let them believe.
Give him 90 days or so, and I'm pretty sure my dad wouldn't be a Republican anymore.
I love my gay son.
Yeah, something like that. It was, like I said, I had a buddy named Chad, and Chad had a pink, white, and turquoise Suzuki Samurai. And ooh. Chad gave me rides places, and I hate the walk, so... I mean, don't get me wrong. I like Chad. Chad was a great kid. I really liked him. We were very good friends.
It's just this comedy of errors. It's just classic.
Yeah. I was going to Pleasant Grove High School. And my dad lived clear the fuck over in the north end, almost in Highland at that point. And so, you know, Chad's like, I'll give you a ride. I'm like, I'll take a ride. You know, we ended up being buddies and driving around and listening to fucking Eurasia and his little, his little pink samurai. Don't get me wrong. He was a cliche, man. But, you know, and it was just stuff like that. And it was like my dad had this what we now call, he was a little twink, you know, bopping in his house. And dad made just kind of rearranged his head to make it work for him and his life view. You know, and this is a guy who grew up and worked in a steel mill before he went to college.
It's kind of sweet.
It is. It's very sweet. And so, so wonderfully Utah, though, you know. But that's it. It's like my dad, he grew up in an area where you know, they would say nigger all the time.
Yeah.
Because they didn't fucking know any better. And then dad went to the army and very quickly realized not only was that a dumb word, it was dumb to say out loud, especially in the army, you know, but that this weird white prejudice of American Fork, Utah in the early 50s was dipshit. Not his word, my word. I think he called it backwards. And that was what he told me. It was like it was this huge eye-opening event for him in his life. And then he went out to... He went on his Mormon mission out in the Tennessee. He was up in the hills, talking to the hill folk, and realized that most people that would use that particular derogative really, really just do not have a sense of self-awareness
It's all the cousin fucking going on.
It's all, well, it's, you know, you decide that a certain group of people is a certain way.
Yeah.
And you are
you have
unable.
Nothing to play off of to give you a different experience. And so you get that echo chamber going on.
Well, it's not even that. You just don't have the self-awareness to realize that everything you say you hate about them is actually you and not them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's a thing. And it's nice though that I have grown enough and seen enough that I know that that's has nothing to do with my hate for Republicans. I am nothing like them. I don't care for them. People on the right, you know, I had an argument with a guy at work about the fucking healthcare bill. And he's like, God, tax paying dollars. I'm like, no, they're fucking not. All it was an opportunity for insurance companies to continue to charge more people. And it would work just fine had it not been for the 244 Republican amendments that fucked up what should have been an easy flow, much akin to the way we do car insurance. And he's like, mm-hmm. Oh, I never thought of it like car insurance. I'm like, yeah, you want to be pissed at a mandate? We've had that one for decades. You know, go have a rally about car insurance. But we've all been hit by cars. All you're just not seeing is that the car that's hitting you is me going to the hospital when I sure shit can't afford it, but I don't want to die. And you know, it's just like that. It's oh, the Mexicans are coming to stealing a job. It's like, no, you are in a highly trained, very specific skill set, dude. There's no one coming from another country over the border that's going to steal your job, you know?
And if they can, shit, they deserve it.
You know, I'm with you. I did landscaping. I ran a crew. I had two crews of, I guess, Hispanic guys. And I used to call them Mexicans, but that turns out could be racist. I don't speak Spanish, so I have no fucking idea.
Technically Hispanic. I got taken to task by my Dominican friend.
Ah,
you have to put a little more effort into identifying them.
Here is what I know: when they talk the English, you know, I mean, it sounds like this.
But they come from Hispania, and you know, if they're Hispanic, then they're Spanish, they're not from Spain.
True. Regardless, these folks from south of Texas.
There we go. The Mexico land.
We had two white crews and two Mexican crews. And my white crews, each crew could handle maybe half of a yard a day. And
white folk are fucking lazy.
Yeah. And my south of Texas, and they were all making 18, 19 bucks an hour. And my south of Texas crew, was knocking out 3 yards a day. And I managed to get the guy who owned the company to pay them, I believe it was $7 an hour, up from $4.
Jesus Christ.
And these guys just thought, I don't know what they thought, to be completely honest, because like I said, I don't speak, you know, no habla español, or not much, not enough. But they turned around as opposed to this dipshit white guy who basically drives the truck. Because that's really what I was. The only reason I was a foreman for that crew was because I was white. Suddenly, almost doubles their pay. I didn't have to buy lunch anymore, which I wish that they would let me because they had some really spicy fucking food. they always had a beer. They were always nice. They kept trying to talk me into coming over on the weekends. I mean, they were just wonderful guys.
Yeah.
And they suddenly, you know, they've got the white crews that treat them like shit every morning. And then they go out and they do three times the work for one-fifth the pay. And then I come along and I'm like, man, you guys are good. And I get them more money. And they're just like, holy shit, what the fuck are you? You're the nicest white guy we've ever met. And I'm like, that's really sad. I don't know how we got here. Squirrels. We've chased the squirrels.
Yeah, I don't know how we eventually got to this point. I've kind of lost track.
So, all right. Let me do this. Let's take a step back. So,
okay.
We got you through college. We got you, the criminal justice system. We've got you working in the Borg Collective. We know that you've gone into social work.
Well, I was the clinical supervisor for the federal drug and mental health courts, and so I worked with Valley Mental Health, but I went out to the Borg Collective quite often. It's also a giant cheese grater.
That's not as silly.
You're trying to make it sound a lot more awesome than it really is.
No, it looks really shitty. But a cheese grater serves some sort of an aesthetic purpose. And that building just exists to suck.
I could tell you exactly why it looks like shit, but I don't think anybody would care.
Well,
actually originally designed to come out further, but federal guidelines make it that an entrance can't be a certain amount of distance from the main road.
Yeah, you're right.
After the Oklahoma City bombing. And so they had to scale back. And so basically all of the nice architectural designs that they were going to have had to be scrapped because they had to pull it back.
I just look at it and I'm like, well, I guess you just haven't finished unwrapping it yet. Somebody lost the wrench that fit that particular nut. That
it's pulls the IKEA of the federal courthouse.
Oh, it's awful. All right. So you're working and you're doing all that. But somewhere in the heart of Aaron Burton beats the blood, pumps the blood of the dork, the geek. Yes.
Yes. Quite so.
Now,
it has always been there.
What's that evolution been like?
Oh, God, I don't even know if there's much of an evolution. To go back, so my parents were both terrible drug addicts back in the 70s, early 80s.
Delicious.
Yes, and my mother finally got fed up because my dad was the bigger drug addict. And we moved back in with my grandparents at, I was about the age of 3. And I was already just obsessed with Star Wars. I mean, that was one of the things that my father, when he was around, we could connect with. And it just resonated with me. And then slowly as time went on, I started becoming obsessed with The Hobbit. And I had my best friend, who was a year younger than me, right around the point when I think I was 8 and he was 7. His older brother had gotten into Dungeons & Dragons. And
the Devil's Board Game.
What's that?
The Devil's Board Game.
You know, most Mormons actually don't have a problem with that.
Well, they did when I was a kid.
You were in the wrong fucking place.
No. It was D&D was the devil, and you would worship demons and.
Oh, and you got stuck in the satanic panic.
Yeah.
See, what it was is all I had to explain to my grandparents, because my grandfather. It's the funny story. My maternal grandfather. Back before I was born, my mother started reading The Lord of the Rings because it was really, big back then with the counterculture, and she was a hippie. And my grandmother had heard that, Lord of the Rings was evil or something like that in church. And so she turned to my grandfather and said, we should see I'm trying not to say my mother's name, but what she's reading.
Betty.
And so they stole the book and my grandfather started reading it. And then he became obsessed with Fellowship of the Ring. And then my grandmother, being a stay-at-home mother at the time, started reading it while he was at work. And they became obsessed with Lord of the Rings. And so by the time that I came around, when I was playing Dungeons & Dragons, they asked me about what it was. And I started telling them. And they're like, oh, it's Lord of the Rings. And they totally had no problem with it.
Again, Twain, I quote this one a lot. I misquote this one a lot, but travel is the enemy to ignorance. And if you can't travel physically, you read a book, travel mm-hmm. mentally. And that in and of itself is also, an enemy to ignorance. And it is. I mean, when all you've got in your life is the Bible as told to you by other people.
Mm-hmm.
Chances are you're going to have some pretty fucked up views on how the world is.
Exactly.
Because go back and listen to any fucking Judas Priest or Ozzy. And you find me what the hell was so panic worthy about it.
An Iron Maiden. See, and that was and that was the funny thing is that for me, Dungeons & Dragons was never the nerds. My friend,
these are my people.
My best friend's brother, who was running it, he was big into Iron Maiden and Megadeth and just the metal scene. And so to me, it was so bizarre when the only other people I could find outside of our D&D group who played D&D were these fucking nerds. I was like, what the hell is going on here? This is like metal. So, it's like I was playing the game thinking it was a Man of War cover.
Okay. I played with guys that listened to Erasure. you know what? That's not true. I mean, Johnny, JC, I remember. Okay, so he's really hard to pin down. He's quite unique. And you would go through, like, and maybe you had this, maybe you didn't, but his cassette collection.
Yes. Oh, yeah, I was around for the
cassette. We had finally shed off our 8 tracks and our vinyl. But, I mean, he had some goofy shit in there, but he had a lot of Pink Floyd, which I loved. He's one of the reasons I love the entire Pink Floyd catalog, especially the early stuff. Mm-hmm. I found Floyd at, obviously, The Wall.
Sure.
And went forward from there and didn't go back for a while until Johnny made me listen to Umaguma enough times that I finally found the genius in it. Or Umaguma. Sorry, Johnny. I don't give it. Fuck them. They're rich. I don't give a shit anymore. Most of them are dead. By the way, have you listened to the new Pink Floyd album, the one that just came out this last year?
I have not.
Oh, it is smooth. It is just...
I'll take your word for that.
It is a long-ass Pink Floyd jam session. There's only one song with words. It's beautiful.
It's probably the only way it should be.
Oh, I love it. But he did, and he had, like, the Hot House Flowers in there, and there was some Joe Satriani, you know, and...
What,
some
Rush?
not that I recall, but he'll probably correct me on Facebook tomorrow. But yeah, so, this was an eclectic group of guys. Some of them were a little more new wavy like me. Some of them were metal. Jason thought, I'll fuck this up too. Big Def Leppard, Van Halen kind of guy. You know, we had other guys that listened to other, keep in mind, this was several years. We weren't as cool as you guys.
No, we were not cool. We just thought we were.
But then at the same time, to be quite straightforward, even though straight's the wrong word for it, we would spend a lot of time listening to fucking show tunes, too. Les Mis had just popped up out of nowhere, and holy shit, you could not escape it with the girls we hung out with. And then Miss Saigon came out soon after that, so it was those two. I got pretty sick of those and started teaching myself old Rodgers and Hammerstein stuff to sing during show tune sing-along time, because it would drive them nuts, because it wasn't Les Mis or fucking Miss Saigon. And I'm out there, you know, doing Man of La Mancha and Camelot and Camelot I still love.
How did you ever get laid?
I got laid all the time.
Well, maybe that's why.
Dude, I can fit into almost any social situation. And
you were a chameleon.
Well, I was thin. I was thinner. I was in incredibly good shape.
And you had luxuriant long red hair.
I didn't quite then. I had really long bangs. It wasn't quite long in the back until
you had the
I went to college.
Skater thing going on.
Kinda, yeah. I was not a skater. I was a faller off board guy. My little brother, who has far more dexterity than I will ever hope to possess. If you took all of the dexterity, you know, in my entire life, and condensed it down and tried to shove it into 1 hour of my life, my little brother could just casually wander by me. In any way on a tight rope that's on fire without breaking a sweat. That's my little brother. Better looking than me, you know, faster, much smaller, quicker. We used to race all the time. He'd always win unless we were in a pool, you know.
Or you could just, never mind.
Yeah, it was a weird competition to where I would do big guy things and he would get pissed about it. You know, and then I was jealous of his entire fucking life. And I don't think he ever put together that everything about me that he thought I was competing with him on was really just me fucking trying to stumble through day to day in our very young years together. And everything that he did, I wish the fuck I could do. And we took it wrong. We had many years where we didn't even speak to one another. Just there was no relationship there. By the time I left for Colorado, I think we're buddies now. I like to think so. He moved to Texas. We don't talk very often.
No, that makes it easier to be friends.
Well, when he lived up here, we didn't talk very often either. I really missed him from Thanksgiving to Christmas because that's the 2 times a year I get to see him. He comes over on both holidays and I feed him. So him and I love his wife. She's fantastic. I've squirreled again. So you're playing the D&D, you're listening to the Megadeth, you're worshiping the devil.
Oh yeah. And I was Deacon's Quorum president too.
I didn't. You know what? You and I have talked a little bit about this. I was seminary president for 3 years.
Yeah, it was my grandfather at the time was first counselor, and there was a calling of God because they knew I was fucking around at that point. I was stealing my mom's cigarettes and you know probably leaving. You know, disgusting socks that could stand on their own all over the place. And
hey, decided, you're lucky that you had cigarettes handy to steal. I had to steal them from 7-Eleven.
Nah, my mom had them. But, God, Jesus, I'd never want to smoke a Benson and Hedges again. There's a brain cell for you, huh?
Mine are Newports. We stole a carton of Newports. God. My cousin and smoked them all in about 4 hours.
I was pretty pissed off, but I wasn't. I didn't have enough self-esteem at that point to be able to say much, and so I just kind of went with it. And then I realized I could delegate, and I'd never had to pass out the sacrament. And so I just sat back in my power and just, fuck you, go. I'm gonna sit here and not do anything. The one thing that probably saved me from a life of crime, because I wasn't doing so well, was my mom decided to go back to school up at the University of Utah and move downtown, and I grew up in Midvale. And I got to kind of reform my identity because I got I was the target in all my classes because for anyone who's not familiar with the LDS faith, the way that they break up their youth groups is by calendar year, not by school year. And my birthday is December 31st. So I was constantly fucked over. I was the youngest kid. I was the kid that came from a divorced family. You know, my mom didn't go to church and she smoked and went to AA. And
they knew that.
Yeah, really. I was a target. And I was getting really pissed off. And
has AA ever been secret?
What's that?
Nothing. Go ahead.
Has AA ever been secret?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
I'm just using. I don't think they knew that, but you know, and I had already I had an atheist streak going through me when I was seven. Religion never clicked with me. And so I just had a lot of anger and stuff. And so, with my mom, moving downtown, I was able to escape that. But yeah, I found all my, escapism through movies and books and, role-playing games and video games. And just that probably kept me from being a Columbine shooter.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. So, a lot of anger, a lot of issues there. Dad popped back up in my life when I was like 13 or so. And from 13 to 18 was when he really had gotten his shit together. And so that helped a lot, too. But, you know, I was kind of left behind in between two parents that had some really rough fucking problems. And I tried to grow up way too quick and play the part of the parent. And so, I mean, that's, without a doubt, part of where a lot of my psychological issues come from and why psychology appealed to me. But yeah, I escaped through geek media and just never was apologetic for it. Just, you know, if anybody tried to give me a hard time, I was like, fuck you. And if they tease me too much, I kicked their ass. I tried to be the defender of all the weak when I was younger. That was the way that I survived. And right. So I would pick fights with the bullies.
I did that too.
Yeah. So that was always one of the things coaches that resonated with me.
Yeah. No, I did. I got in a lot of trouble for brawling in high school. And basically it was just because these jerk off popular ass nuggets would be treating my dork friends like shit, mm-hmm. or being rude or touching a boob without permission. Never touch a boob without permission.
Never.
Want to, you bet. Don't. So, yeah, I got in a lot of trouble for brawling in high school.
Yeah, I did, too, up until junior high. It took a suspension for me to take a hard look at, you're going to fuck things up pretty bad, Aaron, if you keep this up. So I kept the rage in check, but not enough. I just brawled outside of school. So,
yeah, no, I never learned that lesson. I took it everywhere with me. I had a chip on my shoulder. Still, I mean, and I don't think we should get into the psychology of Jeff and his violent past, but yeah, I know where it came from.
That's for a non-recorded moment between the two of us.
Well, if people have listened to enough, they could put it together, but I did. I liked to, there was nothing like just taking a bully down a peg, just being, you know, one of the fucking, the theater fags is what they always called us, and just having a theater fag beat the shit out of a football player just always delighted me.
gave you the opportunity to take control in some way. Somebody who reveled in yanking control from somebody else. And
I think I was more in it for the public humiliation.
Yeah,
I liked embarrassing the shit out of those date raping motherfuckers.
See, and that's where I shifted gears when I went into high school, and, you know, desperately looking for a counterculture to grasp onto when I got into the punk scene. You know, that wasn't the official, I mean, it was already done and over with, but, you know, 90s punk scene. Yeah. I learned to completely tear down the jocks and everything, and I could emotionally just rip into them. So that's why I jokingly say, you know, I used to use my powers for evil, because, you know, one of the things when you're growing up in a really shitty childhood and you've got parents that you're constantly trying to monitor if they're sober or not, because you have no idea how that's going to affect your housing or getting fed or anything like that. I got really good at reading people and finding their insecurities and then exploiting it when I needed to feel like I had some control over my life, because I sure as hell didn't have it at home.
Yeah. Huh. I mean, you and I are a lot alike now, and we came up a lot different. And that it makes me sad for the childhood you, and yet delighted to be your buddy now. Because you're fantastic. I fucking love the shit out of you.
I appreciate that.
You know, and I did. This is it's not a brag, but, you know, my parents split up. My mom and I were estranged for almost 20 years, and whatever we have now is odd and awkward. I still love her. I just wish she'd spend more time with my kids, because, you know, grandmas don't last forever. But
that is true.
Yeah. And she's their last one. So, well, no, my dad remarried, so never mind. I got a spare. And but I had my dad, and my dad.
Then he met in Thanksgiving.
There you go. But yeah, my dad, he was always there. He was always a good resource for me. He was always a little late to the party. Had the, let's talk about the dangers of masturbation talk with me about 3 weeks after I lost my virginity when I was about 14.
And too little too late here.
You know what? My dad gave really good lectures, and so I did sit still and I did listen to it, and I did tell him that I understood and thought maybe I should look into this masturbation thing more. It sounds awesome. Again, I had no idea. I found out how cool sex was well before I discovered what shampoo does.
Shampoo's the worst thing possible.
Yeah.
And, burn!
And it was a problem of being big enough and having parents that... You know, I'll give my parents credit for one thing, and I've done it to my kids as well, and that is they never talked down to us like we were, you know, less than or sure. Not. It was always adult-ish conversations, you know, obviously about childish things, but still, you know, they treated all their kids with a modicum of conversational respect, maybe not emotional respect in some cases, mom, you know. And so I was more well spoken than most of the kids my age, because both of my parents had been teachers. They both had, you know, advanced graduate degrees. Mm-hmm. They're both wicked smart, and they talked to their kids like their kids were smart. And so by the time Dad and I had resettled down in American Fork, I had an unfair advantage over the other guys. And that's not bragging. That's just what the fuck it was. Yeah. This is how I came up, and it's different than most kids come up. And so I did have a good support team. And I did discover girls in sort of the backwards way, because the first girl I was with thought I was 3 years older than I actually was. So she thought she was nailing a high school guy. And then, and this was right as school was about to start, I believe my eighth grade year.
Sure.
And she was very, very startled to see me in seminary on our first day of school. I thought you were in high school. No.
Ew.
That would be creepy, a high school girl hitting on an eighth grader? No. Or ninth grader. I don't know. I've come into everything sideways, and I've usually done it by walking or running away from things that are actually pretty good for me. And I'm fond of how my brain works now and who I am for the most part. And I have to wonder, had I not been so fucking restless as a kid, you know, what sort of Boy Scout leader, what sort of, you know, Deacon's Quorum teacher would I be now? had I not wandered off and decided that psychedelics were awesome, you know, and that I liked single malt scotches and the tobacco is fantastic. And it's giving me this particular tool with which I'm communicating with you now. I mean, this is not my voice from 20 years ago. This is the one I have carefully cultured with cheap blended whiskeys and cigarettes.
Hey, it's incredibly sexy. So, well, now so there's nothing to complain about.
Now I have it. I have to quit.
Yeah, you probably should.
So I don't know. So you have been doing Geekhead now with your buddy, and you've Taylor,
Big Bear. I don't think he. I had to kind of teach him the irony of picking that distinction, but
if he likes it, you know, who am I to judge?
He's a big cuddly, you know, hairy guy. So
I've only seen the picture of him with the beer goggles. Has he seen that? Does he know that's what's out there?
Oh yeah, I told him.
Okay, and he still doesn't want to give me a picture.
Nah, I just told him fuck you. I'm putting this because you never put it around.
There you go. So you started doing that not too long ago.
3 years ago, actually.
Okay.
Right about this point. So yeah, with Geekhead Radio, the way that this came about, I used to listen quite frequently to a podcasting network that was called the D20 Radio Network, and their big thing was when one of the Star Wars role-playing games were around, they had an entire podcast that was dedicated to kind of breaking down the rules, talking about the books, and you know, they had a good enough geeky sense of humor, but you know, I kind of took that attitude of, you know, they're not bad, but I bet you I could do better, and took a little bit to actually come anywhere near that, and I still wouldn't say I'm necessarily better, but just decided I had started doing a podcast segment for something entirely different where I was interviewing other members of this D20 radio network, and just went, I fucking love this.
Yeah, microphones are fun.
Oh yeah. And so I didn't know the tech stuff at all. I was like, I need to find someone who knows the tech stuff, and my good friend Clayton Havens, who started Geekhead Radio with me, we kind of jumped into it, and it took us a while to kind of figure out where we were going. And in about 8 episodes in, we just went, oh, Jesus, we need to get another voice in here. And we picked up an old coworker of his who still lived in Colorado because he was in Texas, and we were doing this over Skype.
I would call her a former coworker.
Yeah. Courtney Piraeus, and she was fucking awesome. I mean, she had a totally different slant on everything, and she gave me somebody else to bounce off of because for as awesome as Clayton is, he's a terrible public speaker, and when I�let him pick topics for the episodes, they were terrible.
Love you, Clayton.
What's that?
You don't think he'll listen to this?
Oh, if he does, he'll admit to it.
Oh, all right then.
No, we strengthened up quite considerably, and so we were doing pretty well. And one of the coolest things was for the first Salt Lake Comic Con, when it was still just kind of percolating, I had gotten in touch with Dan Farr very, very early on, and just said, "Hey, look, you know, can I help? Because this looks like it's not, you know, looks like this is brand new. Doesn't look like it's all that big of a deal. And I would love to do what I can." He said, "Well, you know, we're trying now, but you know, if you want to advertise on your podcast or whatever, that'd be great. I'd appreciate that." And then we decided, hey, let's have everybody come out to Utah, and then, you know, we can meet each other face to face and have a good time with that. And I mean, as you know, that first Salt Lake Comic Con, just before it even launched, was building and building and building. And we ran around and had a lot of fun with that, but life just kind of got in the way. And by the time Fan X rolled around, we were recording less and less. And then eventually it just got to the point where it was May of 2014, I think. We pretty much agreed, let's kill the show. And because we just couldn't make it work. We were recording maybe every 5 weeks at that point, and listenership was just dropping substantially.
They do like fresh product as often as possible.
They do. And And so I just kind of on a whim, I decided.
Yes, listener, we're talking about you.
Yes, we. I decided for the fuck of it when the next Comic-Con came around, you know, I'd apply for a press pass. And I got accepted. I was like, well, shit, I should probably use this in some capacity. So I talked to them. I said, hey, you know, I've got this press pass. I might as well throw something back together. Can you guys record? And they just couldn't do it. And I'm like, well, fuck, I am not going to let this opportunity go away. And my, you know, now co-host Taylor Crawley, he's a friend of mine from 30 years back. I just said, hey, look, dude, I need somebody with a dry sense of humor that I can play off of. Do you want to do this? And so he said, yeah, sure, let's do that. So we recorded one episode before the Comic-Con, and then I did a post wrap up. And by that point, I, because of the lovely Melissa Merlot, had got connected up with Brian Higgins, who had a panel on positive psychology at the Comic-Con, and he had been looking for people in the field who kind of had a geeky slant. I'm like, fuck, this is perfect for me. So
it really
jumped on,
is.
Yeah, jumped on board with that, and discovered that Melissa Merlot was on the panel with me.
What?
Yes, and now at this
the
point,
hell you say?
and this is the best part of all of this. We had actually become Facebook friends, but I knew you did podcasts, but I didn't pay much attention. Because you friended me when I joined the Atheist Page of Utah.
Yeah.
And I was just like, who the fuck is this dude?
I love like, atheists.
And so I was like, all right. So I kept, you know, I never really interacted with you. I didn't know you. And I, you know, I was like, oh, he's got some podcasts. I didn't pay a whole lot of attention, but I saw Hold 322 in the Left Show and Defenestrate Media going
fuck,
and
everybody's
going.
Everybody's got a fucking podcast.
Yeah. So I got thinking because I was like, I need to make this podcast a little more local. And I saw Melissa there and I'm like, she had asked me, she's like, so what is Geekhead Radio? And I told her, she's like, oh, that sounds pretty cool. That's kind of like, you know, what my friend J.M. Bell does with Hold 322. I'm like, oh, yeah, I saw that. I haven't listened to it yet. I said, well, I'm thinking about jumping to being completely local. She's like, you should totally get a hold of them and just let them know that I'm your friend from high school and I recommended you. I'm like, okay, I'll do that. And so after that panel, I felt reinvigorated. I'm like, oh, this is an opportunity here to, you know, I love doing the podcast, but it was just dying. And if I had motivation and reason, and I reached out to you very shortly thereafter and you showed interest and then you promptly ignored me for 2 months.
There was something happened.
And in hindsight, knowing what was going on with Forrest now,
yeah,
it completely makes sense.
Yeah. At the time, I probably just like, oh, what the fuck have I done?
No, I never personalized it. I just sat there and was just kind of like, oh, should I say something? I don't want to be like one of those.
No.
You know,
and the truth
dude,
is,
do you like my podcast?
I would have been more than fine if you had said something. And it came down to right when that happened, we were trying to get the 200th episode of the Left Show Celebration put together. And you've probably heard me bitch about that. Mm-hmm. And everybody was just, we finished that fucking Comic-Con and it was just like the hardest thing in the world to get shit done. And Forrest wasn't feeling well and we didn't know how bad it was yet. You know, but we were getting there. But we knew something was wrong. And it wasn't getting better. And so that was hanging over us. And then the 200 got pushed off again. And it just, everything was just fucking nuts. And then I got fired. And then right after I got fired.
Yeah, you hadn't gotten fired yet. Because what you did is when I finally said, hey, you know, did you ever get a chance to check out my show? And you're like, dude, I'm sorry I blew you off. Come guest host on Hold 322.
Right.
And that's pretty much what started it.
Well, what I did, and I explained this to Melissa and made her promise not to tell you, but now we're buddies, I can, is I hadn't been able to listen to much of your shows because I'm an audio snob.
Oh, they're terrible.
Yeah, well, and the patter was good. There, you guys had some good chemistry, and I liked that, and it was going back and forth. But the actual, you know, the encapsulated sound, after a while, it starts to make me aggro, and I don't... I don't know why. I'm not, you know, it's just like, oh.
You get fine-tuned to a certain sound. It makes perfect sense to me.
It's part of the reason why I run around like the good fairy of audio and try and help podcasts I love sound better, is so that I can listen to them without thinking about the sound. But I liked the pattern, and I especially liked the way you seemed to you kind of ran you nudged everybody in the directions they needed to go. You pulled them back after a little while, and that's hard to do. And I know that because I have a bunch of fucking lunatics in my basement every Sunday.
It's wrangling cats.
Yeah, and you're a better cat wrangler. And I was like, well, this is good. And I tell you what, Melissa, what I'll do is I'll have him come on the show, and just see, you know, how he interacts. And. And I can tell already he's going to probably bug the shit out of John the first couple of times. So that'll be funny for me. I'll enjoy that. And you came and you were great and fantastic. I've had you back one or two times?
Three times now.
Right. And every time, you know, you're fucking solid. So that's great. I said, let's do it. And I had no idea that you were so fucking awesome. I'm just like, this will be fun. We'll get a new show. Maybe I should start collecting shows. It'll be neat. It'll be like fucking Yu-Gi-Oh cards. You know, and instead, you know, you and I can't really go do details, and I can't really tell anybody why, but over the last few months, both to myself and to people that I love, you have been this incredible positive fucking force. You know, you were a fun board game show that I wanted to listen to, and instead,
awesome.
Yeah, and let me tell you, there are conversations held behind your back in which people talk about how fucking awesome you are. You probably listened to Hello Sweeties from time to time, and they were talking about you the other day.
They're yeah, like, that was touching. I love those girls. I mean,
yeah, they're just fantastic
as people. They are incredible. They're gorgeous, sure, but you know, they're so much fun to talk to, and they're God. What I mean, I've heard you say this to the girls. I'm just going to say this, and Rebecca Frost really fucked me over the other day. because I sat there and said, I'm like, you women are so awesome. Where were you when I was a teenager? Where were the girls that were into the geek stuff? She goes, I was in elementary school. I'm like, fuck you. Thanks for making me feel old.
Yeah. Just keep in mind though.
And you know, and I've got to say this.
She was in preschool.
Since we're talking Geekhead Radio, I just have to say this shit.
Yeah.
The episode, one of the episodes you had Taylor Hunsaker on, and I listened to that episode of The Left Show, and I was just amazed with her. And I'm like, she is fucking awesome. And it was because of the Fat Camp that I even got in contact with all of these ladies. And I was trying to get another female voice because I missed Courtney, and Courtney just couldn't, you know, she couldn't make it work. And I was trying to keep things local. And,
Courtney.
Yeah, and I put out a call out. I'm like, I need another female podcast host. And Rebecca said, look, I'll guest. And that was really awesome. And I finally listened to your episode with Taylor Hunsaker and was sitting there thinking, I need to get her as a guest. And if I can do this, I need to get her on the show. And the day that we recorded with her, Taylor Crawley was just terribly sick, had horrible laryngitis. And so it was just me and Hunsaker. And we had such a fucking blast. I mean, she wasn't officially a host on there, but by the end of it, I'm like, I've got it. I've got a snagger. Because I already knew you were trying to get her for your show on the weeks that Melissa wasn't on. And I just threw out the invitation.
I was trying to be, now hang on. Because I was trying to be smooth and subtle and not let her know how just fantastic she was in an overall gush, because I'm just terrified of women. And we have on the Left Show, and this is a problem, especially because one podcast stole four fantastic talents.
Yes.
You know, out of that, but we tried so hard to find a permanent lady host, at least one or as many as I could get my hands on back in the early days. And we posted everywhere, Facebook. I even went to MySpace twice to see if I could find anything. And I mean, Backstage Utah, and we put out casting calls. Nobody wanted to do it. Nobody wanted to do it. And this is back when it was coming into a presidential year. Our numbers were way better than they are. you know, in the swing out of a midterm election,
mm-hmm.
this is the bottom, man. There's nobody's fucking anyway. And so just out of nowhere, I managed to get Melissa to come out, and then I get her to come out again. And I'm like, I just wish you would be on the show every week. And she's like, I can't do every week, but I can do every other week. I'm like, really? Okay, great. And she so rewired the way we were doing things. I think that she kept the show from dying because I wasn't bored. And I don't mean that as a cut to the guys, but I mean, we've been doing this show for 4 fucking years, and it's just like, we're doing it, and we're doing a thing, and it's funny, and we do A, B, C, D, and we're done. And then you throw Melissa into the mix, and it's like,
oh, she's great.
And it's a whole other fucking animal, and it's so much funnier. And we're doing news now instead of just political news, which I love. I love the fact that somehow with Melissa coming on board, we pulled away from just, you know, 2 hours a week of slamming Republicans to, you know, 2 hours and 40 minutes and 20 minutes of news. No.
And then Disney porn.
Yeah. And it's, and shit like that comes up more than it used to too, which is suspicious. And then, I met Taylor at the Comic Con back in September and just asked her to come on the show. And then again, because she's like, no, I'll come down whenever. I'm like, really? Okay. And she does, she just sits down and she is naturally a part of a room, and that's fantastic. And
I had her sit down, and at the end, I'm like, look, I'm just going to be straightforward here. I want you to come back. And she's like, oh, yeah, I'd love to be a guest again. I'm like, not as a guest. I need you as a co-host. She's like, really? She's like, I was hoping you could say that. And it was like a total, like, I had asked the sexy girl out to the prom. I mean, I had that level of excitement.
And she said, why the fuck not?
Yeah. And just because it's weird. We are like clones of each other in some very similar ways. She's the female me. And that works really well on the show. And I mean, she's only been an official co-host for 2 episodes, and one of them had terrible, terrible audio.
I'm well aware.
Thank you for trying to save that.
So then my favorite part of that, as we sit here and once again compliment these incredible women that have fallen into our lives in the last year or so.
Mm-hmm.
It was the fun awkwards of the day the two of you let me know that you were seeing each other podcastually. And I'm just like, well, can I still have you on the weeks I don't have Melissa? And she's like, of course. And I'm like, then I'm fine. And then you're like, what the fuck, dude?
No, I was just giving you a hard time.
Oh, I know, but it was so much fun. And so I'm having 2 completely different conversations with you guys. And part of me is like, yay, that was really, this is going to be fun. And then, now I don't want to give too much away now.
Yep.
But we're going to launch a new show for you in a couple of weeks.
I was thinking of, I mean, if you want to see it as a second show, that's fine. I was just thinking it as part of the same. But your call.
Well, I don't know, man. I mean, is it still Geekhead? Oh, my God, it actually works better, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, anyway, we're gonna start doing weekly with you.
Yes, sir.
And it's going to be different, and it's going to take advantage of your shrinkage superpowers.
My powers of shrinking in front of a woman.
Ding.
No, it's more of a...
And it is. And I want people to watch out for that. And then just because it's late and I got to fucking edit this still before I go to bed and I got to work in the morning.
We got to wrap the shit up.
For those that are wondering, March 20th will be the Save the Forest concert at Bar Deluxe. It is going to prove to be a very good time.
And I will be there.
You will absolutely be there. And if you can help me vamp here for a sec while I look for my list.
So basically this is going to be a fundraiser to help the wonderful and amazing Forrest Shaw and his family. You know, he was on the last, Tell Me a Story. And this guy, he is a king. I've just barely gotten to know him, and I'm already angry that, life is not allowing me to fully, Jesus, I'm going to cry up here.
No, it did. It put a fucking expiration date of question marks.
And I'm pissed about that. And so I'm going to do everything I can in my power. And, you know, I've done some stuff behind the scenes to make sure that he and his family are taken care of. And, you know, for those of you that are listening and you keep hearing about Podcastville and you keep hearing all of this stuff, this isn't just, you know, pointless rambling. This isn't just a name out there. This is an incredible man who life has kind of fucked over.
Yeah.
And there's no kinda about it. And this world is going to be such a lesser place when we finally lose him. But
all right, now you're getting all dark. Throwing sand in my eyes.
Let me finish. If there's ever a human being in the world that deserves this help, he's him. And I'll get all PBS-y on this. Seriously, people, if you're listening to the show, and you know, Jeff's got tons of listeners. If we could get all of you just to throw in $5 to Podcast Phil, this isn't going to Jeff. This isn't going to us. This isn't going to our equipment.
Wait, this is going to keep
some great people in their house.
No, it really is. And they desperately need it. So we're having the big Save the Forest concert. It's going to be March 20th at Bar Deluxe. The tentative lineup is as follows.
Yes, it's serious.
Music, Mary Tebbs, Lisa Pretoris, I hope I said that right, Dave Hahn, Joe Pagnanelli, and then, lucky fuckers, we've got some of these incredible women we were just talking about.
Yes.
Melissa Merlot, Taylor Hunsaker, Rebecca Frost, Crystal Starr, will be helping me in between when the bands are setting up and taking down.
Hey, you can throw me in there too if you need it.
I don't. I have four women that are really pretty.
So, if I wear a push-up bra, no.
You will? Okay, we'll make it work. And so we'll have more on that. Hopefully I've got the ticket reservation system fucking figured out by Monday. I hope. Otherwise. All right, this feels like a part one, sir.
Yeah. I'll give you the rundown, some stuff another time. I mean, we had a lot of... a lot of stuff to talk about, but
we had some squirrels too.
Yeah, we had some major squirrels
chasing bunnies. So we will do this again.
Because
apparently all I have to say is, "Hey, get on Skype," and you fall for it. So, in the meantime, thanks, guys. Visit podcastville.com, theleftshow.com, hold322.com, and of course, geekheadradio.com. At your soonest convenience to listen to the fine quality programming here on the Defenestrated Media Network. I just made that shit up.
That was great.
That wasn't bad. That was smooth.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Did we dork out too much? Do you think we've made the women in our lives uncomfortable?
Nah.
Cool. Then I'm gonna quit recording now.
All right.
I'm on my best behavior, trying to avoid an early grave.